In the aftermath of World War II, Americans donated thousands of farm animals to help with hunger and reconstruction in Europe. It was called heifer relief, based on the idea that it was better to give a family a cow once than milk every day. The man who came up with the idea was Dan West. He was a member of the Brethren Church, which in 1944 opened its National Volunteer and Service Center in the small Carroll County community of New Windsor. And this is where his heifer relief project took root. 60 years later, the men who escorted the farm animals overseas reunited at the Brethren Service Center. WAMU's Jennifer Strong has the story.
They were known as the Seagoing Cowboys. Their job was to escort thousands of donated horses and dairy cows to Europe in the mid to late 1940s. Most had never been on a ship. Many had either been too young to go to war, or like Eugene Lichty, their religious beliefs kept them from fighting, and they were looking for a way to contribute to the post-war effort.
I was a conscientious objector, scheduled to be a pastor, but I had a little guilty conscience because my friends had either entered the military or went into conscientious objector camps, so I had offered to be a volunteer to help with relief work after the war.
Lichty, like many members of the Brethren Church, is a pacifist. Brethren, also called Anabaptists, volunteered time, land, and vehicles to care for donated farm animals until they were ready to ship out for Europe. About 4,000 heifers passed through New Windsor, where they stayed on a farm that belonged to the parents of then 8-year-old Patricia Roop Robinson.
My father decided to donate our farm because we were near the port of Baltimore. There were also other conscientious objectors who could work on our farm. A handshake, a few conversations, and the next thing we knew, cattle were coming in the driveway.
Once the international paperwork and medical records were in order, the heifers were loaded onto rail cars at the New Windsor train depot bound for the harbor, where they came into the care of seagoing cowboys like William Miller.
Our ship left out of Baltimore, the harbor of Baltimore, across the ocean into Hamburg, Germany. And our job was, of course, the same as if we were home on the farm. I was to water and feed the cattle and keep them clean, clean out the stalls. It was an easy job for me because I'd been raised on the farm and knew all this stuff.
Now in his 80s, Miller and his wife still live in Carroll County. He says not all of the seagoing cowboys were seasoned farm workers.
I wasn't old, but I was, I guess, in the middle 20s. And I think most, as I remember, most of the guys on there were younger, were boys. Some of them out of the city that didn't know the front end from the back end of a cow, really.
Seagoing cowboy David Brightbell.
Our pastor one morning said, "We're recruiting cowboys." And he explained what that was. And my friend and I were 17 years old. We said, "Let's try it." So we got our orders, didn't know what kind of livestock it was going to be, but turned out to be Texas horses. Took 28 days to get across. When we arrived, how many tons of wheat, I don't know, but the lower holds were full of wheat, and German POWs bagged it by hand and unloaded it on the docks.
I went with 707 horses to Bremerhaven.
Seagoing cowboy Merlin Scholl lives in Bridgewater, Virginia.
There were 84 of them in the hold where I was. They started out, there were just three of us to take care of the 84 of them. I discovered right off that if you touched a sleeping horse, it bites before it wakes up, you know. So we wore sailor caps, white caps, and either whistled or sang or talked, something to make noise so that the horses would know we were coming. Watering was the thing that took so long. You had to get the bucket full and hold it for each of the 84 horses.
Scholl and more than 30 other cowboys are here at the Brethren Service Center in New Windsor for the 60th anniversary of the Heifer Project, where they share tales from their trips.
There were two general types of ships. One of them was called a Victory and one was a Liberty. They were ships that were built very quickly to get the supplies over during the war. Everyone wanted to go on a Victory ship because it was faster. But we got a Liberty, and it really wasn't that bad once you got used to it, except they baked their own bread, and there were little black bugs all through it. So you slice it thin, hold it up to the light, and pull out the black bugs before you eat the bread.
You learn fast how to take care of things in a new setting like going on a ship.
Seagoing cowboy Glenn Rohr from Boonesboro, Maryland.
I was assigned to the top deck of the ship and had 27 horses to take care of. The idea was to not try to make friends with them, but that's hard to do when you work with them every day. One will hold still long enough for you to reach out and rub its nose. And if it doesn't react too violently, you keep at it. And if a horse would get down, we'd have to get it up. If it died, hoist it over the side of the ship and drop it into the sea. And pictures in the paper or something on the radio can tell you about it, but it really doesn't strike you very as when you can really see it in person. Hard to believe how much damage can be done to a place.
Merlin Scholl says he wasn't prepared for what he saw either.
There was just rubble everywhere. We tried to go by streetcar, and we'd get into a pile of rubble in the street. You'd have to stop and get out and walk around it, and they'd have another streetcar on the other side. In the beginning of the war, our government kept saying, we do precision bombing. We never bomb a church. Of course, I knew, but it hadn't really registered with me. Towards the end, they did saturation bombing. And I was first shocked to see all these destroyed churches because I had believed what the government told me in the beginning.
There are only a few ships left like the ones these cowboys rode across the Atlantic. One of them is here in the port of Baltimore. Eugene Lichty is at the waterfront for a family reunion. It's also his 61st wedding anniversary. In the mid-1940s, he met ships carrying seagoing cowboys when they arrived in Italy and then helped distribute the animals. Families who received one were asked to give its firstborn female to another family in need. Lichty says they often tried to give him something, too.
First thing, they would offer me Italian wine, and I explained for religious reasons I didn't drink alcoholic beverages. And so usually the next thing would be eggs. Some of them kind of encouraged me to just kind of suck the egg on the spot, but I wasn't accustomed to that either. But by the end of the evening, quite often, I'd have a couple dozen eggs on my motorcycle and hope to get them back to a hotel without breaking them.
The effort in Maryland grew into what is today the large multinational nonprofit, Heifer International. Now based in Little Rock, the foundation has given animals to 7 million families around the world. One family is Beatrice Beeras. She grew up in Kasinga, a village in western Uganda. Beatrice is the oldest of 6 children, none of whom could attend school, until they received a dairy goat.
Through selling the goat's milk, through selling some of the baby kids of the goat, we were able to raise enough money to be able to pay for my school tuition, buy me uniform, and even putting up a new house, you know, a house with a tin roof, not with grass thatch like the rest of the other village homes.
Beera's dedication made up for starting school at 9 years old. She won a college scholarship and is now a student in Connecticut. Her story inspired a children's author to write the popular book Beatrice's Goat, which led to interviews with 60 Minutes and Oprah Winfrey.
Yeah, I had a very hard time trying to adjust to it, but to my family that has lived in a village, all this sounds like fantasy to them. Most of it sounds even like lies to them. Still don't believe that I sit on a plane with 380 other people. They think as small as they see it up there, it really doesn't carry more than one person.
Beera traveled to the reunion of the seagoing cowboys to show them how their work lives on. It was an emotional experience for many of the men. David Brightbell recalled another emotional encounter from his ship ride back to the U.S.
After we hosed out the stalls, the stables, picked up 2 groups of GIs, they put up hammocks where the horses were, and we were taking them home. The war was over. They had landed on Omaha Beach in an invasion, and us 17-year-old kids were bumping shoulders with these guys. It was quite an experience, and I'll never forget it.
For Metro Connection, I'm Jennifer Strong.
Coming up next, Carla's Chemo Sabis. At 22 minutes before the hour, this is Metro Connection on WAMU.